Magic. Free money made the international debt problem disappear. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, World Notice Post, covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Australia's banks have traditionally funded their lending book by leveraging offshore funding, which enables them to lend big and push property prices higher. I actually saw this as a critical risk to the banks and to Australia more broadly, because it exposes us to the vagaries of the global financial markets, and there's a risk to the Aussie dollar. But thanks to the pandemic, the Reserve Bank has magicked this away, allowing the banks to lend afresh at low rates, thus pushing property prices even higher while containing the international exposure risks, at least for now. So the property spin cycle can run yet again. Now, it's called the Term Funding Facility, or TFF, which was the source of the cheap money, just 0.1%, offered to banks in Australia as part of the COVID response. And of course, it substantially changed their debt and funding profile. Overall, total net capital inflows have been hovering at just over 5% of GDP from the financial crisis until 2015, but has since fallen sharply in 2020. The total net capital outflows were just 2% of GDP. The supply of these low-cost funds is likely to continue to curb the bank's need to tap offshore capital markets. And according to the central bank, lenders have drawn down about $145 billion under the scheme and are expected to draw down the remaining $64 billion by the end of the financial year, the 30th of June. And the term funding facility will then roll off from the 30th of June over the next 3 years. In fact, drawings under the TFF have picked up noticeably ahead of that deadline. Now, the RBA thinks the bulk of the funding available under the scheme will be taken up, and so the scheme will be providing a substantial source of low-cost funds for the next 3 years. This, and the bank's other policy measures, they say, have delivered and will continue to deliver very stimulatory monetary conditions until the economy returns to full employment and inflation is consistent with their target. But of course, this has consequences. By reducing the bank's reliance on more costly international funding, and this could have downstream impacts on inflation ahead. The bank thinks the improvement in the economic outlook globally and in Australia has contributed to a rise in sovereign bond yields to around pre-pandemic levels. Underpinning this, there has been an increase in inflation expectations to be more in line with central banks' targets. At the same time, expectations of shorter-term interest rates over the coming years have increased. But with the term funding facility expiring on the 30th of June, the three-year swap rate lifting over the first few months of the year, and yield curve control not expected to be extended, fixed rates are expected to rise to reflect increased lending costs. Even so, the RBA says household and business borrowers continue to benefit from record low interest rates on most loans. Their balance sheets are in good shape and the economy is benefiting from supportive fiscal policy. So there are good prospects for growth and even eventually an increase in wages and inflation. But they anticipate that will be a gradual process, with inflation unlikely to be sustainably within their target of 2-3% until 2024 at the earliest. In short, the RBA thinks that there's been a bit of an increase in some new fixed rates, but the effect of this on broader financial conditions is minimal, and short-term rates, including for variable rate loans, which constitute the bulk of credit, will remain low for as long as it takes to achieve the bank's inflation goals. Now, Assistant Governor Financial Markets Christopher Kent gave an online speech yesterday on the term funding facility, other policy measures, and financial conditions. So let's look in more detail at what he said in that speech. He started by saying the Reserve Bank's package of monetary policy measures is supporting the Australian economy through the pandemic. It reduced funding costs across the economy and is aiding the provision of credit to households and businesses. The TFF is a key part of that package. The board confirmed in May that the TFF will proceed as planned with final drawings of three-year funding due by the end of this month. So it's timely, he says, to discuss the operation of that facility and the ways in which it is contributing and will continue to contribute to stimulatory monetary conditions. He went on then to discuss some of the bank's other monetary policy measures and the evolution of financial conditions of late. Average interest rates being paid by businesses and household borrowers are at or close to historic lows, and financial conditions more broadly remain very accommodative, he said. The TFF was announced at the onset of the pandemic to provide banks access to low-cost funding for 3 years. The facility has three overall aims. First, it was put in place at a time when wholesale funding markets had been significantly disrupted and the economic outlook was extremely uncertain. The facility has enabled banks, which provide the bulk of financing to the Australian economy, to confidently extend credit to businesses and households. Second, the TFF is contributing to lower funding costs for banks, which has in turn led to lower borrowing rates for their businesses and household customers. In addition, as he discussed in an earlier speech, the TFF is indirectly helping to lower funding costs more broadly, including by encouraging investors in bank bonds to look to close substitutes, thereby pushing down yields on bonds issued by businesses and on asset-backed securities issued by non-banks. And third, the TFF has provided an incentive for banks to increase their lending to businesses, particularly SMEs. Banks have received an additional dollar of low-cost funding from the TFF for every dollar of extra loans to large businesses and an additional $5 for every dollar of extra loans to SMEs. The bulk of additional TFF allowances are attributable to increases in SME lending by a range of banks since March 2020. To date, drawdowns on the TFF amount to $145 billion and banks have until the end of this month to draw on the remaining allowances of $64 billion. Drawdowns have accelerated in recent weeks, and this growth is similar to the experience prior to the deadline for the initial allowance in September 2020. They expect that the bulk of available funding will be taken up because the costs of the facility remains well below the costs of similar funding available in the market. Most banks are expected to take up most or all of their remaining allowances. The TFF, in combination with the bank's other policy measures, is contributing to a significant reduction in the structure of interest rates in Australia. The substantial fall in banks' funding costs have been passed through to borrowers who are benefiting from historically low rates. The most direct effect of the TFF has been to provide banks with a low-cost source of funding. In particular, the TFF provides access to funds for 3 years at a cost that has been well below the cost of wholesale debt for the same term. As banks have drawn on the TFF, they have largely refrained from issuing new senior debt, so the total stock of bank bonds has declined as existing bonds have matured. At the same time, banks have been able to take advantage of the strong growth in deposits, the cost of which has declined to be much lower than the cost of issuing a new bond. The run-up in deposits has been driven in part by RBA purchases of government bonds from non-banks, as well as the indirect effects of the TFF. In short, the availability of the TFF, along with the large increase in low-cost deposits, have combined to reduce banks' costs of funds to historic lows. And in addition to reducing banks' funding costs, the decline in bond issuance has benefited other institutions issuing debt. With fewer bank bonds on offer, investors have switched into other securities, including asset-backed securities and non-bank corporate bonds. This has contributed to a noticeable decline in spreads on those securities. For example, spreads on newly issued residential mortgage-backed securities have declined to their lowest level since 2007. And non-bank lenders have responded by issuing large volumes of retail mortgage-backed securities, and their market share in housing lending has rebounded from the modest decline around the middle of last year. Issuance of bonds by non-financial corporations have also been above average since mid-2000 and 2020, particularly in the domestic market. The effect of the TFF on funding costs has been complemented by the bank's other monetary policy measures. The bank has lowered its policy interest rates to near zero, enhanced its forward guidance, set a target for the three-year government bond yield, and put in place a programme of purchasing government bonds. In combination, these measures have caused interest rates across the economy to be lower than they would have otherwise been. The decisive decline in short-term risk-free rates has caused interest rates on variable loans to decline to historic lows. In Australia, the bulk of loans are in that form. Around 70% of housing loans are variable rates. For business loans, the share is even higher at 85%. Funding costs for banks, and so ultimately those lending rates, are largely determined by the bank bill swap rate, which is closely linked to the cash rate. Bank bill swap rates have been at record lows, and banks have passed on lower rates to their existing customers by reducing their standard variable rate. The average rates paid by borrowers have fallen in addition to the decline in standard variable rates, because new borrowers have been offered even lower rates than most existing borrowers, and many existing borrowers have been able to refinance their loans at lower rates. Fixed loan rates have also declined as a result of the RBA's package of policy measures. In particular, two other policy measures are influencing expectations of the future path of the cash rate and hence other benchmark rates along the yield curve. First and foremost, there is the bank's forward guidance. This is a commitment not to raise the cash rate target until inflation is sustainably within the 2-3% target range. Achieving that goal will require the labour market to become tight enough to generate a sizable increase in wages growth. The board's assessment is that that condition won't be met until at least 2024 at the earliest. The bank's target of around 10 basis points for the three-year Australian government bond has worked to reinforce the bank's forward guidance and therefore guide market expectations against the cash rate target. Together, these policies have helped to reduce interest rates on fixed-rate loans. Indeed, fixed housing rates have declined by more than variable rates since the start of the pandemic in response to the bank's policy measures, so much so that there's been a noticeable increase in the share of new household loans at fixed rates. Since late last year, the volume of loans fixed for 3 to 4 years has grown rapidly, albeit from a low base. As a result, a number of Australian households have locked in low rates on their mortgages for some years. The bond purchase program has also led to an easing in financial conditions by contributing to lower yields beyond the 3-year mark. Their estimates suggest that this program caused the yield on 10-year Australian government-backed securities to be 30 basis points lower than otherwise, and has also reduced the spread relative to the government securities on securities issued by the states and territories. This lower level of yields puts downward pressure on interest rates for governments, households and businesses, as well as downward pressure on the exchange rate. Overall, the bank's package of policy measures has brought about very accommodative financial conditions in Australia, he said. The TFF has been an important part of this package and will continue to provide support in the years ahead. While bond yields and interest rates may remain very low, they have increased over recent months out beyond the shorter end of the yield curve. This is in response to the improved outlook for economic activity and inflation, both here and offshore. Sovereign bond yields at the longer end of the yield curve rose to around pre-pandemic levels earlier this year, underpinned by a rise in inflation expectations from very low levels to be more in line with central banks' inflation targets. The adjustments in financial markets to date are not a cause for concern, he said. However, measures of inflation expectations have returned to levels of a few years ago when inflation was consistent with or even below inflation targets. In other words, they don't point to inflation over the coming years sitting above central bank targets in a sustainable way. The increase in nominal yields has been smaller than the increase in expected inflation, which implies that real yields have declined. That's beneficial because it means that monetary policy is more stimulative than it would be otherwise. The bank's yield target has ensured that the 3-year government-backed security yield remains at around 10 basis points, but 3-year yields in other domestic markets rose over the first few months of this year, alongside the global correction in bond markets and the rise in inflation expectations. In particular, the 3-year swap rate rose a bit and has remained at these slightly higher levels. Higher government bond yields beyond the three-year point and swap rates have passed through to other interest rates that affect private sector borrowers. Corporate bond yields have increased a little, although those yields are still low, including because spreads remain at low levels. Moreover, the domestic corporate bond market has served firms well. The market recovered relatively quickly after the beginning of the pandemic. And in addition to above-average issuance by non-financial businesses in 2020, the domestic market has absorbed a large volume of issuance at longer tenors of around 10 years. The rise in the swap rate around the three-year mark has flowed through to higher yields on bank bonds in the secondary market. Bank bond issuance is low, however, so the rise in bank bond yields is having relatively minimal effects on banks' outstanding funding costs. Some banks have increased rates on fixed rate loans in the terms of between 3 to 4 years in response to the rise in swap rates at these terms. The increase has been modest to date, and so these rates remain very low in historical terms. And in any case, fixed rate loans at these longer term accounts for a small share of overall lending. Meanwhile, the rate on short-term fixed mortgage rates are little changed, and also many older fixed-rate loans that are rolling off in the period ahead will be moving to lower rates than they had been paying previously. Now, there's a couple of observations I want to make here. Firstly, of course, the untold story here is that bank profits have been directly supported by that ultra-low-rate funding from the Reserve Bank, because essentially they don't have to pay as much for their funding. They can give some of it back in terms of lower rates, and they can also pocket the difference. And by the way, they can also reverse some of the provisions that they made in earlier parts of the cycle. And that has allowed them to increase profitability and shareholder returns. The second point is this, that clearly the Reserve Bank still believes that inflation will stay within the 2-3 band if they are fortunate, and they are banking on wages growth to drive inflation higher. The bottom line is this, though, that the reason we have such low interest rates is because we have created a monster which allows banks to lend more. That lending then flows into more housing loans. Those housing loans pump up housing prices, and that means that people can borrow yet more. So the debt that people are building is going to continue to grow. That's true also of some small businesses too. But of course, no one is thinking about how to repay the capital in those loans. Everyone's only concerned about meeting repayments. And so we are seeing the situation where the level of debt continues to accelerate. And whilst the international debt burden may be lower at the moment, of course, once the term funding facility goes away, it means that banks will then have to access other forms of support. The first of those will be to lift interest rates on some term deposits slightly. That's already happening. The second will be to start issuing bonds into the international markets and to access those capital markets. Now, those capital markets, of course, are subject very strongly to international forces. So therefore, some of the risks that we're insulated from at the moment may come back. But you have to recognise that the RBA has worked a magic trick, because at the moment, the international debt burden that the banks are holding is a lot lower, and it means that there's less impact should that go wrong, or indeed should exchange rates move against them. Nice trick. Pity that ultimately we all are going to have to pay for it. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.